Hello, welcome to the synopsis of Yoga of Vision of the Universal Form. This is episode 42 of the series entitled The Gita Decoded, and we are now going to look at what the true message is that God wishes to give his son Arjuna in this chapter. Sister Denise, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
What would you say is the main message that is contained in chapter 11 that isn't contained in any of the previous chapters?
Well, what I think is very interesting is that we have Sanjay reappearing at this time. So Arjuna is seeing a vision. Sanjay is talking to Dhritarashtra and explaining to him what Arjuna is seeing. And so you've got these three levels of experience. And the other thing is that Arjuna, while having a visionary experience, cannot express himself. It's only afterwards that he is really awestruck, bowled over, and has a completely different sense of God after the vision. Because the vision has shown him the being of God without any disguise, without any veil or any covering. You see, because if you think about it, for a human being to have a direct encounter with God, normally that is really, really scary. And it's scary for different reasons. Normally it's scary because a person can be seen by God and they don't feel pure enough. But this was different. Here, God is showing his destructive form, the death of death. I mean, he's showing his form as containing the whole universe, which I interpret as he has the sanskaras of the knowledge of everything. But the actual process of destruction or the dissolution of everything, because God is the creator. Brahma is called the creator, but Brahma is really the instrument of creation. And here God is telling Arjuna, look, see me as I really am, in my all of my glory and all of my terrifying, terrible state. Know that everything is already done, and be my instrument. And I think this is a very, very deep message for us. Everything is already done. Now we just have to go through the motions. And the idea of being the instrument of God is brought up. And that, I think, is also relevant for all of us, because our relationship with God is usually, what will God do for me? But here is how God wants us to be usable as an instrument for his work, which is to get the world from its current state through a total dissolution to a completely rejuvenated state.
What is then the responsibility of Arjuna in this picture? What must he do?
Well, Arjuna has to submit. And it's interesting that he won't submit until he's overawed.
What do you mean by submit?
Well, he has to agree. He has to do what God tells him to do. Submit. Mm-hmm. Accept. Mm-hmm. You know, the issue of acceptance is a big one. Because there are so many things that we attribute to God. You know, for example, somebody dies. We say God took them. And our relationship with death normally is, why did they die? They shouldn't have died. Can we get them back? This sort of thing. And ultimately, there is acceptance. There are many things that we don't like that we eventually have to accept. And here God is saying to Arjuna, look, this is the moment of world history where there is dissolution. Everybody has to die. And everybody dying all at once is something unacceptable. Individually, people dying, getting reborn, etc., that's normal in the world. But here, the great destruction, everybody dies and returns back to God, that is too much. But yet, God is saying, you know, don't worry. We've done this before. We can do it now. We can do it again. It's all right. You just have to allow yourself to be carried into this altered state where you see a terrifying form of reality, and then we go back to normal, you know. So there's that side as well.
Now, Sister Denise, the thing that struck me most about chapter 11 is when God says to Arjuna that that which you are of the view you have to do, I'm the one who's doing it. You have to be an instrument. Okay? This was news to the reader. This was news to Arjuna. Take us through that message. You see, because we're of the opinion, as far as our lives are concerned, that we have to do in our internal war. Okay? I mean, the Bhagavad Gita plays out in our lives as well. Okay? It's not just between Sri Krishna and Arjuna. And it was news to Arjuna that he's not the one who's actually doing, God is.
Well, I don't know whether I would go with that, because definitely God cannot do direct action. He has to get it done through someone. So in that sense, Arjuna has to be the instrument. So I wouldn't say that God did it, so therefore Arjuna isn't doing it. But God knows about it. So the knowledge of it having been done is contained within the being of God, and therefore Arjuna can be the instrument to go through and get it done. Because you see, God can never be one who does direct action, otherwise he's bound in the wheel of karma, and he is the liberator, he is the purifier, he cannot be bound. So I think that we have to interpret it as the sanskaras of knowledge that God has.
Elaborate on the law of karma and how it plays out in this particular chapter.
Well, in a general way, the law of karma is, once you come onto this earth, you get bound in a body, you're bound to take rebirth until the cycle is completed. And the only way that you can come out of the wheel of karma is if God brings you out. And so therefore God cannot be in the wheel as well as bringing you out of the wheel. And this is why the epithet of God is akarta, asochta, abhokta. In terms of karma, he cannot do direct action. There is also this expression, karan karavanhar, God will get things done through someone else. So Arjuna is his agent, his instrument, in order for this war to take place, which is destined to happen.
Sister Denise, the word annihilation appears in this chapter. Is it God's task, Arjuna's task, for that to happen?
No, it cannot be on the head of an individual human being for there to be annihilation. Arjuna simply has to be the instrument for the scene in the war. But God is known to be the one who gathers all the souls and takes them back to Paramdham, the supreme abode, the Brahmand that we heard about in an earlier chapter. God receives everyone back. You know, he is the seed, and everyone is brought to their seed form. Then the machine moves forward in the next kalpa. So this is not something any human being can be responsible for. It's too heavy of a karma. So it's like it's a scene, it's a destiny, it's a return. You know, God talks about the dissolution. So dissolution is a much more innocuous word. Destruction is a very heavy and charged word, which people really dislike. But of course, in the vision, he sees the war to end all wars. Dissolution means, you know, we've reached the end of the movie, and so we press the stop button. Different.
God does not want Arjuna to be afraid of him, does he?
Well, no, you see, because God and Arjuna are so close. People in the world, they either dislike God or they're afraid of God, but they can't come close. Arjuna comes close, and you see, God wants to be close also. So there's a very beautiful relationship between the number one human and the Supreme Being. It's the most beautiful relationship there is.
Tell us more about that.
Well, he called him his beloved.
Yes.
He called him his son.
So and, he is. And friend.
And friend, yes. And so God is the mother, the father, the friend, the teacher, the guru, everything. And Arjuna is the one who enjoys all relationships with God. And that is what yoga is. To have all relationships with God and to live all of those relationships.
So, Sister Denise, the message that the reader takes from chapter 11 is that that there is a need within us to know more about God, and not just to know it intellectually, but to feel it as well.
Yeah, you want to. It's an ambivalent thing. You want to know God, you want to not have blind faith, you want to really know and experience and feel, but on the other hand, you're afraid to because you don't know what it is.
And we know now through this chapter that God has a gentle side shown in the form of Krishna and Vishnu. And then we know that God has a fearsome side, which is part and parcel of the mechanism in human world for the end, as it were. Okay, but then the reader is asked not actually to focus on that part of God, but to focus on the gentle side and to draw.
Yeah, because only on the gentle side can you come close. With the other, you're terrified, you're drawn distant. But a glimpse is necessary for you to grasp who it is that you're interacting with.
Yes, and so now that we're armed with this information, where do we, as the reader, go from here? What do we do with this? How do we, what do we do with it? Question number one, and how do we put it practically into our lives?
I think that it's quite difficult to really answer that question because, you know, it's telling you, you have to realize that eventually everything is going to dissolve and disappear. That's difficult for people to work with. He gives a lot of importance. The soul is eternal. And that's right in the early chapters, especially the second chapter, you know. So the idea of the destruction is the eternal soul has to go through it. So it's annihilation, but not total annihilation. There has to be some sort of a changeover. So I think even we would have to say that there can't be total annihilation. If you think of the story of Noah and Noah's Ark, there's a few people who survive the great flood, and they become the seed family for the world after. You know, there's antediluvium and post-diluvium. And so this is very much there in the human history. I don't think that in this vision it was seen as a flood, but it was definitely seen as a great upheaval in terms of all of the people being chewed up by the tusks in the mouth. Very, very graphic description of a horrific end. You know, there are these stories, these myths of creation, destruction throughout the world, which you find, and nobody can really quite figure it out because it's sort of not historical, it's mythic.
Sister Denise, I really like what is contained in verse 40, where it reads, "Salutations to you from in front and behind, salutations to you on all sides also, O all. You are infinite valor and boundless might. You pervade all, therefore you are all." This is what Arjuna says to God, having seen God's full splendor. Is this the feeling in one's heart when one experiences God? Is this how awesome God is? Because when I read this, the sense that I get from Arjuna is that he is awestruck. He is overwhelmed with emotion and the depth of feeling. He was shocked, although he knew God before and was engaging with him very intimately. He was shocked after he received the divine eye as to how magnificent God really is.
Yes. I think that this experience of the magnificence of God is personal. And I think anyone who loves God has a right at some point in their life to see the magnificence of God. And that maybe circumstances become extraordinary and it becomes a way to move out of normal reality and have an extraordinary perception of God, and this sort of encounter between the soul and God, I feel, is a very important part of the human experience, and then it leaves an indelible mark in the soul, which is why a person will believe in God.
How do you put, Sister Denise, the last verse in chapter 11 into practice, verse 55, the one that I read out at the end of the last episode? How do you put it into practice whilst living in this world? Because ordinarily, our give and take are with people and with things.
Yes. What I see in this is, okay, God is teaching Arjuna how to have karma with God. And then your attitude towards people needs to be that whether people are performing good roles or bad roles, you cannot consider that somebody's bad role means that you can have enmity with that person. You have to be absolutely dispassionate in regard to the good and the bad. Otherwise, you know, conventional morality, which is where Arjuna was in the beginning of the Gita, is to say, this is good, so we like it. This is bad, we don't like it. These are good people, we like them. These are bad people, we don't like them. Here God is saying, it's not like that at all. You have to come out of this preference and attraction, repulsion, all of this, and just be with me and see things the way I see them. You see, because God loves each and every one and is not deluded by the different roles that people have, because it's a game.
What do you mean by that? I want to ask that question in this context. Most people believe that they are their past and they are their personalities. And you're saying that's not how God sees us?
Well, God sees us as actors, and we have roles. And there is a game that's playing out, which is the great game of the force of good and the force of evil, and we are involved in that game. But when we return to our seed stage, we are, you know, neutral. And so the game has to play out, because otherwise there's no interaction between the soul and God. So as you see the big cycle of the world, you are first of all with God, then you are sort of reflecting God, and then you move away from God, you turn against God, then you're missing God, then you're trying to reach God, which is taking you further away from God, then God finds you again. The whole drama of this relationship between God and the human soul, the great love story, and then the great story of the battle between good and evil and so on. All of this is played out, and we are actors in this play, but none of us is a bad person just because we play a role that involves some bad things. You know, everybody has light side, dark side, everybody does all sorts of things. And eventually we have to come to terms with that, be neutral and let go of everything and just be the child of God.
So you're saying that somebody is not their role either?
Well, you have a role, but you have to be detached from it. Otherwise you will be limited by it. And you do not know your whole series of births. God will see you from the beginning all the way through to the end, but you do not know who you are. God knows who you are.
Mr. Denise, having heard what you just said, I get the impression that there's the soul here, and then we're surrounded by all of these labels that we have in our lives, and somehow those become limitations and blockages between you and God. Mm. We use that as an excuse. I am so ... I in the past I did ... and I am in the negative form ... and therefore I cannot be with God.
Well, you saw in one of the earlier verses, God said, irrespective of someone's parentage or whatever they did, anyone can come to God and be completely acceptable to God. He's not concerned about what you did or what you are or what you were. Mm. It's not an issue. Mm. But otherwise, people limit themselves and they limit each other.
We are about to say goodbye to the audience. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we do so?
I think very important to consider all of the things that may be on your conscience and say, okay, look, God knows about all of it and wants you anyway, loves you anyway. So if God is not bothered about it, you also need to come to terms with it and let go.
Sister Denise, to be with God, is it a calling?
Well, people usually say it's a vocation, but I think that, again, we can refer to the description of the different classifications of people. There are very few who want to know God, who come to know God as He is, and there are many who, you know, hear about God and say, yeah, that's it, you know, but they don't quite experience it. Then there's others who believe in God, but they don't really know anything about it. Mm. So it varies. Who are you?
That's the main question.
That's the thing.
Okay. That question was posed not to me, but to you. So I hope by this time you have an answer to that question.
You know, I think I'd like to say something about this, which I didn't say. So in the last verse, verse 55, you know, the last phrase is, He comes to me. And this is the thing. Once you have seen God, accepted, and then God says, okay, now come to me. I've shown myself to you. Now come to me, be with me, be on my level. Don't worry about all of this, you know, terrifying side.
So, Sister Denise, thank you so much for what you have shared. Chapter 11 is an eye-opener into the true personality of God. We see who God is. We see what He is through the eyes of Sanjaya. We realize that although God has a gentle side in the form of Sri Krishna, He also has a side that is terrifying, scary, magnificent, awesome, and yet He says at the end of chapter 11, come to me in the sweetest possible way. I urge you to accept God's invitation to see the gentler side of God, to accept God's love, and to go into God's arms because He's waiting for you. Thank you so much for giving us your ear today, and we hope to see you for the next episode. Take care and goodbye.